Welcome back, everyone. It's going to be a very short week for us this week. However, we are very pleased in the one day that we are here this week. Dr. Victory will be in here tomorrow with Ivor Cummings, so don't miss that. And then I'll be back the following week on our usual schedule that we're going to start on Monday with Jack Prasovic. And then on Tuesday, we'll be early with Matthias Desmond. But today we are delighted to welcome former U.S. presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy back to the program. I would dare say at the time of his last interview, he said we were in what he called sort of a 1776 moment. I dare say that we are not less so now. I think we are more so in that kind of moment. Things have moved along and they've not moved in a great direction, I would argue. Let's see what Vivek Ramaswamy has to say. He also, of course, is on a short list of potential vice presidential candidates or candidates for the VP position in the Trump campaign. So we will talk to him right after this.
Our laws as it pertains to substances are draconian and bizarre.
The psychopath started this way.
He was an alcoholic.
Because of social media and pornography,
PTSD,
love addiction,
fentanyl and heroin, ridiculous.
I'm a doctor for Christ's sake. Where the hell do you think I learned that?
I'm just saying.
You go to treatment before you kill people.
I am a clinician. I observe things about these chemicals.
Let's just deal with what's real.
We used to get these calls on Loveline all the time.
Educate adolescents and to prevent and to treat.
If you have trouble you can't stop and you want to help stop it, I can help.
I got a lot to say. I got a lot more to say.
The parallel economy has empowered us to care for our health, well-being, as well as longevity. Likewise, for us pet parents who now have a place to go when it comes to keeping the family dogs, cats, even horses in the best shape possible. As a dog dad, I'm thrilled to be working with Pet Club 24/7, a company founded by two guys who lost dogs to serious conditions, including cancer. Pet Club 24/7 has an incredible array of products, including a line of supplements for humans, such as the Enforce Plus Corollius Versicolor and Enforce Corollius Versicolor with Reishi. My friend and colleague, Christina Ferrari, a cancer survivor herself, swears by it.
When I was diagnosed, the doctor in the emergency room told me, "You have 2 years to live."
Oh boy.
Along with the stem cell, I took these. I have been in remission for 8 years now.
For dogs, mush puppy treats are a fan favorite. Rex, you want to? Oh boy. He came right. Oh, there he is. They are also made with the Coriolis versicolor mushroom, which supports their immune system, according to hundreds of clinical studies. Here's Kristen Ludlow, National Vice President.
That strain does matter. We do have the most potent strain, and we also extract it in a proprietary way. And that's why we've been having such wonderful experiences with these products.
Mush puppies are made here in the U.S. There are no fillers. It's non-addicting. Your dog can't accidentally overdose. Go to drdrew.com/petclub247 for a discount off the list price. That is drdrew.com. PETCLUB247, Pet Club 247. Let's talk about aging, because everyone wants to know how to slow it down. For almost a decade, I've been taking a healthy aging supplement called True Niagen. This supplement boosts NAD. That's something that cells can't live without. It's done with a patented form of nicotinamide riboside called NR, or Niagen. It's more efficient and more scientifically reviewed than NMN or other NAD boosters. True Niagen is truly the best way to boost NAD levels, and it's made by ChromaDex. They are the gold standard in the NAD space. Dr. Charles Brenner, the scientist who discovered the NAD boosting potential of NR, explains.
And the center of the metabolism that allows the conversion of food into energy is NAD coenzymes. And NAD gets disturbed in the aging process, and as we're exposed to conditions of metabolic stress, Niagen, which is the form of NR that was developed by ChromaDex, is the best and the only fully legal form of NR, and this is really the gold standard for NAD boosting vitamins.
I love this product. I urge you to try it. Go to drdrew.com/trueniagen for 20% off your order. That is drdrew.com/trueniagen, TRUNIAGEN, and enter Dr. Drew at checkout, DRDREW, enter it at checkout for 20% off. You can follow Vivek Ramaswamy at Vivek, V-I-V-E-K-G Ramaswamy, just as it sounds phonetically, on X, Vivek G. Ramaswamy. The book is Woke Inc. Inside Corporate America's Social Justice Scam. Of course, I think maybe you don't know his past, but he founded a biopharmaceutical company in 2014. He had Woke Inc. as a New York Times bestseller. And he has written several other books. And he has been a presidential candidate. And I think it's been an extraordinary experience to see a young person put themselves out there the way he did. Caleb, is he available now?
Yes,
he's there. We go. Vivek, thank you so much for joining us again.
How are you?
Excellent. We got a little weird delay here, so please bear with me. But I want to say, just listen, I want to thank you for putting yourself out there. As I was sort of preparing for this, I was reading, you know, the usual nonsense hit pieces and BS that gets printed. And I was watching some of the early comments, you know, this little known entrepreneur, so-called, and all these crazy weird innuendos they throw on these hit pieces that were so far from the truth. And of course, so far from the person we got to know as you moved into the presidential campaign. So I just want to say thank you. And my question is, you know, last time you were here, you mentioned that this was sort of a 1776 style type moment in quotes. And I agree with you. How has that clarified for you through this run? And what surprises have you uncovered as you've, as you say, rolled over these logs to see what crawls out?
Yeah, look, I think it's a 1776 moment. I stand by that on numerous counts, and that's only become clearer as time has passed, even over the course of my own experience in the race, and even after I've dropped out of the race. You look at what they're now trying to do to the front runner in that race, Donald Trump, and it reveals, I think, the way in which this is not just about increasing the tax rate 1% or decreasing it 1% like many presidential elections might be about. This is about the basic rules of the road that our country was founded on. Do we actually believe in free speech anymore? Do we actually believe that you get to express your opinion as long as I get to in return? I believe that. You believe that. I think most Americans believe that. But we have a ruling class in this country that's rejected that. Do we believe in the rule of law, that you get to come to this country legally through the front door, but that you do not get to enter this country illegally through the back door? Do we believe in the best person getting the job, getting ahead in this country, not on the color of your skin, but on the content of your character and your contributions? And these aren't black ideas or white ideas. I don't even really think they're Democrat ideas. I do think that there is a deeper issue in this country where the managerial class, the deep state, the people who we never elected to run the government, who are now running the government, they're exercising a kind of power that resembles the British monarchy, actually. And so that's why I think we live in a 1776 moment, because this country was founded on the basic idea that for better or worse, we the people decide who governs. We the people get to decide who actually runs the show. And yet today, just look at what's happened even in recent months. You have unelected actors, you have bureaucrats trying to remove a major presidential contender from a ballot precisely so that we the people can't decide who governs. That's why I say we're in a 1776 moment. And I also think that one of the things that was true about our founding fathers is they made sacrifices. And Dr. Drew, this would be something I'd be happy to talk about at length. They made sacrifices. They didn't just passively inherit the country that they bequeathed to us. They had to make sacrifices for that country. And so if you really believe with me that we're in a moment where the American revolutionary ideals are on the table, then it's going to require each of us to make a sacrifice, as our founding fathers did. That's what made this country great the first time around, and that's what it's going to take to do it again. And so that's why I did what I did, and I'm fully supporting President Trump going forward to make sure he's elected.
You know, at the very minimum, you're right in the sense that at very minimum, everyone needs to be willing to speak up and speak their mind come what may, right? That is actually, that's the insanity of our present moment, that we have to be, to risk, to speak, to give, to render an opinion. That is a risky thing to say, which that's insane, and we should all be willing to do that. I'm wondering what you think about the fact that it looks as though, I mean, the one shining light through the most recent history of this suppression has been X, right? And I don't think X was really even in place yet when we last talked. And now it looks like these deep state forces are not just operating through our own country, In other words, we have Michael Schellenberger's and the Twitter files and all these things that have been exposed about where they have been asking private actors to do their bidding where they could not do so themselves as the government. So we know they've been doing that. But it's starting to look like they're going to places like Brazil and installing governments that will do it for them from those countries. Is that what's happening? Is the blob, as some people call it, like Mike Benz, are they really operating on an international scale to try to ensconce this elite you just referenced?
Look, I think that that's not some conspiracy theory. I think it is a description of plain facts hiding in plain sight. There's a horizontal managerial class. It transcends partisan boundaries. It transcends national boundaries. And that managerial class, I mean, who comprises this, right? The undersecretary of God knows what. The person who's the associate dean of diversity or something else at a university. The person who professionally sits on some corporate board in the HR ranks of the of corporate America's largest Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies. The ambassador to some third-level country abroad. It's the same horizontal managerial class, what I guess you could say Mike Benz calls the blob. The only reason I don't use that term is I think he hits the point on the head, but it sounds too benign. I think the reality is this is a managerial class that's crushing the will of the everyday citizen. Solving the boundary between the public sector and the private sector. That's the heart of the Great Reset. The Great Reset is about dissolving boundaries between the public sector and the private sector, even between nations, so that the actors who lead those institutions can together work towards their vision of the global common good. So that's why you see government actors in the United States, in other countries, using tech companies, ordering tech companies to do through the back door what the government could not do through the front door, through the rule of law. And you're seeing that in the United States. You would see it in countries like China. You might see it in countries like Brazil or other countries around the world. And I think that kudos to Elon Musk for at least being able to speak openly about it. I personally think that, you know what, people are talking about different laws to address social media issues in the United States. Here's one. Anytime a government actor demands that a social media platform engage in speech suppression or amplification, that social media platform or that internet company at least has an obligation to say it to the public. I don't care if that's the Chinese government. I don't care if it's the Brazilian government. I don't care if it's the US government. We should not want to live in a country where internet providers, the modes of communication, are themselves backdoor pressured and threatened and induced through carrots and sticks to censor speech that governments could not themselves censor. That's really the new form of tyranny in this country. And that also reveals, Dr. Drew, where the changes we're going to need in this country, yes, the federal government, yes, they include changes in what we might call the deep state, but it also requires changes that are bottom up in the private sector as well. What Elon has done through reforming and revamping Twitter, those are the two modes. I think the communication sector, and I would argue the financial services sector, including the asset management and banking sector, where we're going to need bottom up competition. That's a big part of why I founded Strive, and I can happily talk to you about that. That was a competitor to BlackRock. Elon bought Twitter. Those are competitors now to Meta and to Google that are changing the behaviors of those firms. We're going to need change through the government, yes, but we're also going to need bottom-up change through the private sector as well. And it's going to take all of the above to really get the essence of our country back.
I'll have you tell us a little about Strive, but before you do that, I just want to focus a little comment on something you said about the managerial state being very much like the British monarchy. I noticed recently, I was studying a little, people know I study the French Revolution, and I noticed that the Jacobins at their core were really wanting an administrative state. They wanted this state of administration run by the people rather than the monarch, but it's the same administrative state that the monarchy invented. People that want these centralized authorities don't understand they're bringing back feudalism. They're bringing back this primitive form of government that became top-heavy, did not work, it's inefficient, certainly not appropriate for the modern moment. But comment on that and then tell us about Strive.
Yeah, if I may, just the only thing I even slightly disagree with you on there is you say, they don't realize they're bringing back feudalism. I think they do realize they're bringing back feudalism. Mm. And I think that's actually the heart of this is the people who are operating in that deep state, they don't think of themselves as engaging in some form of tyranny that's hostile to the governed. No, I think it's actually quite the opposite. They think of themselves as benevolent to those who are governed because in their worldview, just like in the old British monarchy's worldview is this. Mm. We, the people, could not possibly be trusted to actually self-govern, or else we'd burn ourselves to death. Our planet would overheat or whatever. That's the climate change claims of the modern moment. And so their whole point is, if you actually left it to the people, that idea that you get to speak your mind openly as long as I get to in return, that was a laughable idea in old world Europe. That was a laughable idea for most of human history, right? The idea that every person gets an equal voice at the ballot box, that's crazy talk, according to the standards of most of human history. And so that's what's really rearing its ugly head again. I think it's an ugly head, but rearing its head again nonetheless in the modern Western administrative bureaucratic deep state. It's not that's what's best for the people and the citizenry itself. And that's actually the most dangerous part of all. Not that they're necessarily nefarious, but actually that they believe that they're benevolent. And so anyway, that's the only additional comment I'd add.
I'm going to follow on that before we go to Strive, which is that when evil is done, social evil is done, always in the name of good, always.
Yes.
That's just how it's done. So go ahead, tell us about Strive.
Well, I mean, it's just an example of where I was trying to make my difference long before I ran for U.S. president, to see the likes of BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard and these large-scale financial institutions that were using other people's money to advance social agendas that did not match the financial interests of their clients. Yeah, I see a lot of conservatives or a lot of people even who aren't conservative, but throwing up their hands in the air, myself included, writing books. I wrote Woke Inc. I later wrote Capitalist Punishment, going into the ESG movement and its innards. Yeah, and pointing out the problem is one step, but at a certain point, we need people who are going to step up and actually solve those problems. And so I founded a competitor to the likes of BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard, whose goal was to offer the same kinds of financial products, index funds and so on, but with a different approach to voting the shares of the clients and to speaking on behalf of shareholders in corporate America, telling underlying companies to focus on what maximizes value for shareholders, period. No environmental agendas, no social agendas, nothing. What maximizes value? Every company should pursue their own unique mission and create value for shareholders. And the fact that that became such a radical idea at the time that I started Strive several years ago shows how far our system of free market capitalism and even our founding culture as a country has fallen. But it's going to take, I think, those competitors in the market. Now look at the ESG movement on its back foot. Look at what's happened with other tech companies after Elon bought Twitter, now rolling back some of their most draconian censorship measures. Competition is the mother of innovation. Competition is, I think, a good force for good in the United States of America. And so, yes, we're going to need a lot of change driven through the mother of all bureaucracies in the deep state of the federal government. And I'm going to do whatever I can, not only to make sure that there's a second Trump term, but that that second Trump term is a success. Yes, I'm going to do everything I can in my power to do that as a citizen. But as capitalists, there's also opportunities for many of us, whether it's Elon Musk buying Twitter. It was my motivation in starting Strive as a new age financial institution, adhering to old school fiduciary principles. Yes, there's going to take those competitors to drive change through our culture as well. And I continue to think the two most important sectors are communications, that includes the internet, but communications broadly, and the financial sector. Those are the ones that have been weaponized by effectively deep state government actors to be able to do their bidding. And those are the two most important sectors to regain, not to conservative control, it's not what I'm saying, at least to neutrality, where financial institutions stand for what maximizes the value of their clients' dollars, and free speech platforms and internet platforms actually operate as platforms where people are able to engage in open speech and ideational debate. That's not too much to ask. And I think that's the pro-American thing to do in our moment.
And I laugh to hear you say that basic principles of a market efficiency and performance are somehow old world ideas, ancient ideas, outdated, outmoded ideas like performance. So I want to switch topics for a second because I know I have limited time with you. I got a funny feeling that there's something deeply, I'll just use a sort of a general word like amiss with many of our leaders. I think about my own governor in my own state. And it's hard for me to tell what's up because we don't have a press that addresses them. That, I mean, there were, let's just take, say, Richard Nixon. There are plenty of people that like Richard Nixon. That's how he became president. And then there was a press that said, something's kind of up with this guy. Let's dig in and figure, try to roll the log over, as you would say. And lo and behold, something was going on. There is no such press addressing these leaders today. And let me just pile on by saying, you were the only one I noticed speaking back to the press, which I loved and I miss dearly. So please keep that going if we see you again as a part of a ticket. I look forward to nothing more than that. But how do we sort of scratch through the surface of our leaders that seem, I don't know what their inner thinking is, because it's all just a lot of platitudes and hucksterism and vote, pandering to the voters. How do we get at that if the press won't do it?
Yeah, look, I think this is the free and open internet, which sidesteps that historical press apparatus to be able to at least call out their hypocrisies. That's why I'm so focused on the free and open internet, because that's the ultimate check on the media institutions themselves. Now, seeing what I saw, that's part of why in the latter half of my campaign, I made it a focus to call it out to their faces, and so that people could see the hypocrisy of the way in which the dishonest media actually behaves today. But I'm also not a believer in throwing my hands up in the air and complaining about a problem. Let's solve it. I faced off with Don Lemon, exposed, I think, a lot of the latent hypocrisies underlying his worldview, capturing CNN in one warped view of the world, representing a small fringe minority of Americans. Once revealed, he lost his job. And I wasn't the only person who, you know, I think faced that consequence from having been exposed in the way that I was able to hold a lot of these journalists, I say journalists in air quotes, because that's not really what they are, but these propagandists disguised as journalists. And so I did my part as best I could during a one-year presidential campaign. But the ultimate backstop to hold the media accountable is a free and open internet that allows for alternative voices to speak hard truths in a marketplace of information where people are able to assess, okay, yes, I know I heard this on NBC News or ABC or whatever linear medium I was getting my news through 10 years ago. But here I'm also seeing through a free and open internet hard facts suggesting that what I heard on cable television or in print newspaper wasn't exactly what was presented to me as such. And so when you have a media that no longer holds the government accountable, the question is, who's going to hold that media accountable? Yeah, I made that my mission during the presidential campaign. And, you know, I'll honor your request to say that in whatever capacity I'm serving, we're not going to go light on them either.
Wonderful. You gave me hope to get on to the next day. There is another politician who is talking back reasonably and calmly to the press a bit, and that's RFK Jr. He didn't do it quite with the vigor that you did. I miss it so much. So I look forward to you getting back out there. Or at least it's not as visible as it was when you were a presidential candidate. What do you make of RFK Jr.'s run and with the impact he's going to have?
Look, I respect anybody who stands for the right side of at least standing for the voice of the everyday citizen. And so do he and I disagree on a number of questions? Of course we do. I think we have vastly differing views of the Second Amendment. I believe the Second Amendment is not a recommendation. It's a right. I think that, you know, he has different views on the matter. I think I have a view that the climate change agenda is largely based on false premises, that there is no climate emergency. If you look at a lot of his comments, he probably has a different view. So we go straight down the list. I'm against racial quota systems and affirmative action. He's a proponent of affirmative action. So I say this as somebody who disagrees on the substance of many policy questions with him, you know, and he's, you know, on the left of those questions. I'm on the right of those questions. Against that backdrop, I still respect his commitments to free speech. I still respect his opposition to backdoor censorship. He's experienced it firsthand with respect to a lot of what he said during the COVID-19 pandemic about the vaccines and the mandates. I think a lot of that was wrongfully suppressed, and he's an advocate as a result for free speech, both free speech from government intervention, but also free speech from backdoor government intervention. I respect the fact that he's also been critical at times of the ESG movement, critical about the U.S. actually using our own taxpayer dollars to fight somebody else's border where we're not securing our own. And so I respect the ability of an independent voice, even though I disagree with him on the substance of questions ranging from climate policy to racial equity or affirmative action policies or Second Amendment related issues, to say that at least on those core issues of free speech, not weaponization of the justice system or the financial system, and making sure that we're not some interventionist hegemony that's acting against the interests of both Americans and others in the world. That's something that I can say, that even though we don't agree on everything, I will respect him for adopting those views and for being, I would say, rather unsparing at times in a good way about standing for what's right, the rights on which our country was founded.
So I know you've got to run, and I'm going to ask with one last question. And I will, again, posit that everything that I read or hear makes me think about you on a VP ticket. It just really does. It just, everything kind of, every little hint moves that direction. So I hope I'm right. And if so, I look forward to speaking to you when you are either a vice presidential candidate or a vice president. So good luck to you. If that, I'm sure you can't say anything, but I just wish you the best of luck on that journey. But we started this conversation talking about the 1776 moment, possibly. Yeah, I'm going to come visit you in the White House. Susan just said, mumbled something like that, so that'll be amazing. But this being a 1776 moment, and Ben Franklin is famous for having said, we must all hang together or we shall surely hang apart. And you asked everyone to do, to bear up with the discomfort of this moment. What do you want us to do? Do you have specific recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that let's go back to some of those founding fathers of ours. Benjamin Franklin, first of all, this was a guy who not only signed the Declaration of Independence, but he invented the Franklin stove, one of the leading accomplishments in the field of thermodynamics in his day, invented the lightning rod. He actually was an inventor, fun fact about Benjamin Franklin, an inventor of musical instruments that went on to be used by Beethoven and Mozart. So these guys were polymaths. I mean, Thomas Jefferson, yeah. He was the guy who said, the government we elect is the government we deserve. And I think there's a lot of truth to that as well. He invented the polygraph test. He invented the swivel chair while he wrote the Declaration of Independence. So these guys, they were ambitious. They weren't the guys who said, oh, well, you didn't get an expert degree in that and you can't opine on something you don't have expertise in. They said, no, we're the pioneers. We're the unafraid. We're the explorers. And so my first ask to people in this country is, let's get that self-confidence back. That's what it means to be America. That's what made America great the first time around. You're an agent, not riding some tectonic plate of group identity. Believe again that you can achieve anything you want in this country with your own dedication. Make the maximum. Even though each of us has different God-given talents, you have your own. And don't forget that. And that you live in a country that more than any country in human history allows you to achieve the maximum of your God-given potential. Just remember that and behave like it. That's the first thing I would say. But the second thing I would say is just remember that freedom doesn't come free. It requires a sacrifice. Of the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, 5 of them ended up captured and tortured to death, until their death, by the British. 12 of them had their homes ransacked and burned to the ground. 9 died in the Revolutionary War. 2 more had their kids die. Multiple died in bankruptcy because they had their private property seized. So if our founding fathers made those sacrifices, you know what I would ask you to do is just look in the mirror and ask yourself, what sacrifice are you willing to make for this country? And you know what? It might just be taking time to show up and vote at the ballot box and making sure other like-minded patriots do the same thing to compete to win this November. For people of means, you know what? You might be able to do a lot more to support a re-election effort, but it's not just through the government. It's in your capacity as a parent, as a parent-teacher conference, as a school board member, whatever it is, to stand for truth and speak your mind, not just when it's easy, but when it's hard. And when you're the only person in a room who believes what you do, at the very least, for God's sake and for our founding fathers, stand up and say it. That's how we get this country back. And that'd be my ask to everybody who's asking how they can have an impact on this country. Speak your mind when it's hard. Try doing that. And you know what? You're a patriot. And if everybody does it, that's how we're going to revive what this country was founded on in the first place.
Vivek, I thank you for joining us again. Hopefully we'll talk soon with yet further elevated status.
Whatever it is, I'm looking forward to serving this country. And I've enjoyed our conversations, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you, sir. See you soon. All right, everyone. Vivek Ramaswamy, former U.S. presidential candidate, Vivek G. Ramaswamy on X, where you can follow him. The book is Woke Inc. And I'm going to take a little break here, and then we're going to, I think, get to Twitter Spaces. But for some reason, Twitter Spaces.
It crashed.
There's some. I'm having some tech issues.
I took the thing down.
I missed the whole interview because I've been trying to fix the tech issues this whole time. So I'm still going to try it, but. So I don't know if we're going to be able to do calls.
Do you want Drew to start a new Twitter Spaces?
I'm handling it. I'm trying to. It's a tech issue.
It's fine, you guys. I've got a lot to talk about.
Also, Caleb, I took the one on Twitter off, so you can start over.
Okay.
It was only 8 minutes. It was like 4 minutes of commercials. So
right.
It,
I've got a lot to talk about. I'm going to watch you guys. I was not watching the restream or the Rumble Rant, so I'll head over there and see what you guys are saying and maybe comment on some of that stuff as well.
And maybe we'll get a Twitter Spaces up by
maybe
a half hour in or something.
Okay, here we go. Hey, Paxlovid Drew, which I'm going to talk about Paxlovid after the break. care to share your thoughts on repackaged AIDS medication used on your patient? Oh, yeah. How about the black tag label on the Paxlovid box? Yep. I'll be happy to talk about all that. And we'll get to that. Let's see. Oh, the restream seems something's going on there too. Not good. It just sort of came online. Sorry, guys. I haven't been able to see anything because it wasn't working. It's just starting again. So we'll get over on the restream. We'll get on the Rumble Rants. We'll maybe get a Twitter Spaces up and running. But I've got a few things I want to talk about. So do stay with us. We'll be right with you after this. You can spend thousands of dollars and dozens of hours trying to look a few years younger, or you can skip all that and the hassle and go with what works, Genucel Skincare. Genucel is the secret to better skin. Their products are made in the USA using a proprietary technology that combines a naturally effective base with non-GMO ingredients. In fact, you might have witnessed the astonishing effects of Genucel during a recent unplanned moment of our show, when just a little Genucel XV restored my skin within minutes right before your eyes. That is how fast these products work.
I know I'm a snob about the products I use on my face. Everybody knows it. Every time I go to the dermatologist's office, they're just rows and rows of different creams. Retinols, vitamin C cream, under eye cream, night creams.
Scrubs.
And then when I get to the counter, they're overpriced. All kinds of products that you can all find at Genucel.com.
Susan and I love Genucel so much, we've created our own bundle so you can try our favorite anti-wrinkle creams, correcting serums, under eye treatments. Say goodbye to those fine lines, forehead wrinkles, skin redness, even those dark under-eye bags. Women and men of all skin types, Genucel has got you covered. Order right now at Genucel.com/Drew to save 50%, actually over 50%, and you'll get a free luxury spa box plus free shipping. That is Genucel.com/Drew, GENUCEL.com/DREW. We all know the value of a good night's sleep. We feel better, look better, have more energy to spare, but you could be missing out on all of those benefits if you're sleeping on sheets that are too hot or too cold or just plain uncomfortable. I have the solution. Cozy Earth bedding. Cozy Earth is the softest and most comfortable sheets, blankets, loungewear, and more. They use premium viscose from highly sustainable bamboo, and we sleep in them regularly. I wear their t-shirts. Susan wears their pajamas. Cozy Earth bedding comes with a 100-night sleep trial, which means you have up to 100 nights to sleep on them, wash them, try them out. If you're not in love, just return them within 100 days for a full refund. Susan and I love them. In fact, we have Cozy Earth sheets on our bed right now, and they made a huge difference in our sleep. If you've never tried Cozy Earth, we have some awesome news. You can save up to 35% off Cozy Earth right now. But hurry, this offer will not last. Go to CozyEarth.com, enter my promo code Drew at checkout for up to 35% off on your first order. That is CozyEarth.com, promo code Drew, CozyEarth, CozyEarth.com, code DREW. You asked for it, and the wellness company has delivered. The medical emergency kit, replete with ivermectin, prescription antibiotics, and more, continues to fly off the shelves. We keep one here at home. And there are three new kits you need to know about, and more are coming. The Contagion Emergency Kit was inspired by the high demand for the medical kits. In that Contagion kit, you'll find ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, antibiotics, budesonide, and a nebulizer. And a must for your next trip is the Travel Emergency Kit, something I made sure exactly what I give my patients is in this kit and some more. The kit includes remedies for jet lag, variety of infections, even GI ailments. Imagine your flight getting grounded anywhere, say even in the U.S., and you start getting sick. You do not want to be at the mercy of the U.S. healthcare system or any healthcare system. At home, we keep the ultimate first aid kit on hand. It has over 20 essential supplies and medications for situations when time is of the essence. Order one for your car and your go bag. Because these kits contain prescriptions, your purchase includes a telemedicine consultation as well as an instruction manual. Go to doctor.com/TWC for 10% off. That is drdrew.com/TWC for 10% off all your orders. I'm very excited about these kits. Go to drdrew.com/TWC. So, reminder, this is the travel kit thing that I packed with everything that I give every single one of my patients. And the True Niagen, which was at the opening of our show. Again, I'm enthusiastic about everything here.
Just the Paleo Valley.
Yeah, the Paleo Valley has been great. They're back. And Susan, We're sort of a nuts about the bone broth. We have it every single day. And I use it not just because it's a great source of protein and collagen. It's also a good way to manage appetite. It's very low calorie. So it works very nicely with coffee. So there is that. We're gonna get into a bunch of things right now.
But I want to first say something.
Okay.
We lost our beloved Rex Honey Badger yesterday morning. Oh. He was always laying here with me during the show, and I just want to have everybody pray for his sound delivery into heaven, and I hope he's chasing lots of squirrels.
Yeah, it was
been a really tough couple days.
Yes, we were just talking before the show started. We were both talking about how completely beat up we are. It was sudden, out of the blue. He was relatively normal, we thought, and then all of a sudden crashed, and it was shocking, just so shocking. And this is somebody that ran our lives in our house. Somebody.
He was always here, eating the mushroom cookies, and
yeah, he did like those. Yeah, thanks for your support. And Susan, I wish you'd wait a little while before you brought it back, because I've got to find the energy to go on with this show. So thanks for doing that right at the beginning and not at the end.
Sorry. I didn't want to do it at the end and then just leave everybody hanging, you know?
Right. Well, we appreciate it.
But thank you for your well wishes.
The thing that was most astonishing and difficult was this. I was literally playing with him at 5 o'clock. Normally he'd be having some little this and that, but we didn't think it was really anything. Then at 6 o'clock, Susan texts me, goes, "What's wrong with this dog?" And I go, "What's wrong with the dog? What's wrong with you? He's fine."
He never showed his cards. You know what I mean? Like he's always so energetic.
Yeah, it's like a puppy till the very last thing. And then we ran off to the hospital. Oh, there he is. There he is as a puppy. And then we ran to the hospital, and then things got worse.
Okay, so IED is stirring up rumble with the Paxlovid questions.
Okay, that's over on the... Don't. Oh. Hey, are we really going to make us start crying here if you're not careful?
Yeah,
what's that?
Yes, I knew IED would be on that one once you said the word Paxlovid.
Ah, good. Good. All right, so what's she saying? Or he? Paxlovid has one mechanism of action versus ivermectin with 15. That is true, IED. That is all true. This is all true. These things can all be true. Okay? This is why there is a... This is what's making me... I've been yelling about this from the beginning, and I'm picking up more steam again to bring this topic up. It's why there is a clinical practice of medicine. It's why you can't practice medicine with a computer. It's because our intuition as clinicians matter. They matter, and they inform us in ways that literally nothing else can, which is why after we do years and years of studying books, we spend even more years and years of studying cases in the clinic to gain that clinical experience so we can see the infinite variety of the presentation of medical problems in the setting of the human biology. It is not, we almost arbitrarily categorize these things, and then you're all now becoming increasingly aware of how arbitrary our analysis is of the biology, the biological agents, the pharmaceutical agents we use to try to change biology to move it in a more beneficial outcome. And when it comes to things like Paxlovid, IED, about the one thing we can say when we study whether it works or it doesn't work is the null hypothesis is either informative or it is not informative. That's what medical literature can tell us. You have a null hypothesis. This is not the case. That's what a null hypothesis is. Then you study you create an experiment, simpler the better. Do a little, again, simpler statistical analysis, and that null hypothesis was either informative or non-informative, period. Now, in the case of Paxlovid, we have a new study that was not surprising, that essentially individuals with one risk factor for more significant outcomes with COVID did not have a significant benefit from Paxlovid. Not a surprise. My clinical experience has been that in those individuals who do have maybe a little more, two or three risk factors. They're older, for instance. They have hypertension. They have maybe multiple other... My patients have so many medical problems. So let's just say multiple risk factors for bad outcomes. If Paxlovid is used early, remember the argument for early treatment? Guess why early treatment is so important? Because when the virus is being replicated within your body and bursting out of those cells and becoming viremic through your system, that's when the damage is done. If you suppress the viremia, then the inflammatory phase, remember the cytokine storm, doesn't come on with the same vigor or doesn't come on at all. I have had cases, I had one case in particular, where I gave someone Paxlovid who did not have risk factors, would not have met the criteria even for this study that we're saying was non-informative or was, I forget how they designed the study. But in point, it didn't work in that setting. But in that individual, she was better. She'd been sick for 6 hours. She was getting a lot worse. I was concerned that this was going to go bad. And by morning, that person returned to work. It worked. Now, maybe that was a coincidence. It was proven COVID. Maybe not. Maybe it didn't work. Maybe that was just my experience. But I saw several other cases where early treatment with Paxlovid had a dramatic change in the course. And I was screaming at Debunk the Funk about this. And I saw several cases of rebound. And the rebound was very characteristic. Rather than the flu-like features of COVID, they would come back with a lot of respiratory symptoms, not cytokine symptoms and not acute viremic symptoms. It was this rebound phenomenon. We really don't know what that was, but yes, that happens with Paxlovid too. And back to IED, IED is saying it doesn't work. Shut the F up. It doesn't stand up. You don't seem to even understand how to read medical literature. The null hypothesis was non-informative. You got it? That doesn't mean it doesn't work. That means it didn't stand up to scientific scrutiny under the conditions of that study. I'm telling you, clinically, we see something different. So eventually, the medical literature will catch up with that difference as we start to parse out these different candidates for treatment. Is it a good medicine? No. I don't think it's a particularly good medication. You're right when you said that ivermectin has 15 different mechanisms for antiviral activity. It does. I am still got my eye on ivermectin for maybe other viral infections as well. There may be many applications for this. We're looking at it clinically now, and then the medical literature will hopefully catch up. But just like with Paxlovid, it needs to be used very early. I'm not sure yet. So that is the Paxlovid story. It is terribly expensive. And, you know, strangely, the most frequently emphasized feature of treatment in my training and career was cost. Is the cost benefit worth it? And $500 a course or $1,000 a course? No, I don't think it's worth it. You might not want to use that at all in that case. Are there other things like molnupiravir that might be useful? Yeah, might be. Again, not great treatments. And let's even add a third element in here. In the setting of highly vaccinated, high levels of natural immunity, Omicron being the causative agent, you probably don't need to treat anybody with anything. That's the reality. Now, if you have somebody going bad on your hands, IED, which you've never had, you've never seen that, you've never been responsible for somebody, so you've never sat in that position of withholding a medication that you have seen work. Think about how that feels when somebody is going and crashing. Wish they had something for my dog that could have worked. But that is where physicians are and try to navigate in these days. So there we are with the Paxlovid, such as it is. Now, in the setting of other hysteria out there under the broader category of other hysterias, bird flu. Good news, everybody. World Health Organization is developing a vaccine against bird flu. Why? Why are they even thinking about it? Why do I even know what the World Health Organization is thinking about? Why did they say anything publicly about a virus that has infected one human being, transmitted from one bovine setting with zero human-to-human transmission? Zero. Why is that being discussed? You want to talk about murine typhus being transmitted by rats here in Los Angeles? Way more common, way more serious. Why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't we talking about tsutsugamushi on farms? That goes from bovine to humans. Why aren't we talking about that? Why does the press have any business saying anything about the World Health, and why does the World Health Organization, or why does the White House press pool feel they have to ask the press secretary about a single infection? This, we have become hysterical on a level that is almost unable to be comprehended. Okay. It's almost not something that you can even wrap your head around, because it is so pervasive, it is so profound, and it is so ridiculous. And taking us back to the beginning of COVID, I got myself in trouble by pushing very hard against this, much the way I'm doing it now. Now, if there is a avian flu outbreak or bird flu outbreak, I will happily adjust course, and I will happily say I was wrong today when I got angry and said these things. There's from where we all sit, there's nothing that we can see that would suggest that all of a sudden human-to-human transmission will figure out an R naught of two. How that would happen from this is like, I don't even know why they're thinking about it, unless they know something and some country is doing gain-of-function research on that virus. Now, if that's what's going on, then I completely take back what I said. Same thing happened to me with COVID. I did not know people were doing gain-of-function research. I missed the infectivity of that virus. I didn't quite get it. Because it didn't fit sort of natural sort of right. behavior, but okay. And we can argue still about whether it's a natural origin or not.
From a bat,
whatever. But the fact is, I could be getting that wrong again, but if they know something, they need to tell us. If you remember me saying over and over again, Jack Nicholson line from A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. Again, there was the villain uttering those lines. That was considered villainous of government to take that position. It was only 30 years ago that movie came out. Villainous of a military leader to say, you can't handle the truth. Now, I feel as though that is the routine position of our government, and it should be fought against. And much like Vivek Ramaswamy was just saying, we should be standing up and asking tough questions. And we should be asking them of our leaders. I don't know how we get at them because the press is not doing it. I guess we just continue these conversations here in what is the last remaining sort of free environment, which is our free and open internet, though it also is under attack through Brazil. Just to kind of parse out a little more what Vivek and I were talking about, Mike Benz, who we've talked to on this program, has a theory that the blob, which is the CIA, sort of what Vivek calls the administrative state, has gone down to Brazil. And because they can't any longer, under the cloak of anonymity, force private industry like Twitter to do their bidding for them without the public finding out about it, getting suspicious about it. Now they're instead going down to Brazil and doing it through foreign governments, having them silence Twitter and sanction, Elon Musk. However, while we've been working here, while we've been talking, a tweet just came out. The Public Security Committee of the Chamber of Deputies approved a motion of applause and praise for Musk exposing and facing political and unfounded censorship imposed by a Brazilian justice against the users of the platform in that country. So there we go. That's the original problem you're seeing up here. But now there's a new headline that has come within the last half hour, which is that they are reversing that, and they're actually praising Elon for standing up against this corrupt justice who seems to be in the pocket of this potential dictator. Why we would want essentially the same administrative state as the Sun King in France or George III in England, why you would want that administrative monarchical state in our country ruling and making decisions for your life is something beyond comprehension. And why you would want your freedoms limited. I can remember about 20 years ago thinking to myself, in many ways, the U.S. is an experimentation on the limits of freedom. Where are those limits of freedom? And we've been messing with that for quite some time. But to have them externally completely oppressed by people who just decide on their own what they think your freedoms ought to be, That should be the scariest thing you've ever heard in your life. And the fact that it's not is something that I have difficulty sort of managing. I can't even believe it. Susan, did we get the Twitter Spaces going, or are we going to give up on that?
Not,
Caleb,
not
maybe
yet.
You can tell me.
I don't think it's going to work today.
It says I'm.
Do you want Drew to do it? Set it up?
No, it's a more technical issue. But I'll have it working tomorrow.
We have a whole new mixer board
and sound card coming in on Thursday, so it'll be fixed by Thursday for sure.
Fantastic. So I'm kind of worked up today. I apologize if it's excessive. Let me go back to I'm going to go to Twitter. I'm sorry, to Restream and see what's going on with you guys. I unfortunately though lost the page that is on. There we go. See if I can find it again. Well, no, I can't. So I'm going to have to go back and do it again. I have like so many windows open. I can't even find my damn, anytime my way. Susan, any questions from your standpoint based on what I was saying so far?
I think that the government is trying to make, you know, calm down the media by saying, oh, we're going to protect you. And it's, you know, like when they were getting asked questions at the White House, you know, what are you going to do? This is the bird flu. It's coming our way. And they, I don't know, they just respond in such a way that it makes it sound like it's a hysterical situation. I mean, there was one case of the bird flu or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how many flus have we been through? And I know that you said, oh, it's not going to be anything. But if it is
I'm just basing it on the fact that you can go to our infectious disease collection system and look at all the millions of infectious diseases that are circulating around this country and then ask, why one case of bird flu are we talking about that? Why are we talking about that? Aren't we talking about chikungunya? Why are we talking about echinococcus? Why aren't we talking about tularemia? Why aren't we talking about malaria? Why aren't we talking?
I love it when he does that.
If you remember, I used to bring two big textbooks of infectious disease and stick them on the table here. One of them was pediatric and one of them was adult, to remind you that these were just two of 30 textbooks I could have piled up on top of each other with all that's out there to get you from an infectious standpoint.
And, I mean, if it's biological warfare, then maybe we should worry.
Then they should tell us. Yeah. Then I need to know that. If you're doing something to the bird flu in the Ukrainian biolabs, well, by all means, let us know. And so we can really focus on that bird flu together. And the other thing is the centralizing authority, the fact that there's this World Economic Forum that has decided for you how you're going to be happy, how you're going to live your life. Please be a student of history. Wherever well-meaning people have come up with ideas like that, it has eventually, because it's a bad idea, they get to a place where they say, this won't work unless everybody participates. We're going to have to force some people to move off the farms into the city, in the case of Mao, or we're going to have to force people to turn on one another in the Ukraine to be able to take over their farms. They eventually will do things where millions of people are killed. That's what happens every time. And if you're not a student of history, please become one. Please, please, please.
We had that interview with Xi, I wanted to say if Xi Jinping was not
Xi Jinping?
Xi Jinping was not behind the threat across the United States, and it, you know, because he said, well, why aren't we mad at them for developing this virus and killing so many people? Like, it's like, we should be really mad at him and fighting back or
unless we were the ones funding it, or unless we're doing the same thing in various labs around the world or here, then what do we do?
I guess, but it leaked out of a Chinese lab.
Yeah. Well, what if we were funding it? What if we were involved with it? What if we knew full well what was going on? I don't know.
I guess that's why we're not fighting back.
This is back to the blob. This is back to the tentacles of the blob, if Mike Benz is correct, seem to go many different places, far more than I ever knew possible. I'm sort of opened, like I've said repeatedly, I'm open to ideas I never would have been open to before, because I can't get over what the government was able to do during COVID, what they did do. And we have now the head of the NIH, I think he is. Let me get this right. Francis Collin, yeah, director of the NIH, admits that, here's his quote, not the quote, but this is the condensation of the quote, public health put infinite weight on stopping COVID and no cost-benefit analysis, no concern for civil liberties, and zero weight on the consequences of their interventions to stem the COVID infection, again, upon which they put infinite priority. So one is an infinity priority, and everything else is zero. That is in medicine, that's how you harm people without exception. Without exception, that's how you harm people. So people were harmed. They were harmed over such a long period of time that it became so obvious. I can't get over that they did that. I can't get over it. That's the part, and they did it for as long as they did, and with the damage that they caused. And the damage, you could see it when it was underway, and yet they persevered. That's what I can't get over. And so that's why we are trying to speak our minds today and keep the torch alive, and to do what we have to do to push back against the people for whom this seems to have been something they enjoyed doing, something for whom it was seemingly a dress rehearsal, or at least a stress test of some type of what they could do. And they did it. They did it. So there we go. Let me just look at your Restream comments here. Thank you all. Get David Martin back. Okay, yes, he was good. Society seemed to enjoy the tyranny. Some people did. I talked to governors that were really mortified by the position they were put in, and people like Ron DeSantis didn't do it. And I talked to governors that were into it. What are the thoughts on the new Paxlovid study? Somebody's asking. I did quite a long rant on that, so you'll have to dial back and look at that. Okay, yeah. As soon as they refused to give conformed consent, alarm bells should have started ringing. It rang in monkey's head, and they should start ringing in all your heads. We weren't giving informed consent, and we weren't even able to give informed consent. And now we have guys like Aaron Cariotti, who raised his hand. He's involved in the Missouri versus Biden case that has now been more generalized than one before the Supreme Court. And he's a psychiatrist. He was a decorated teacher. He was the chairman of the bioethics committee at University of California Irvine School of Medicine for many years. And he, for years, championed walking the walk when it was tough, when bioethics mandated it. When the vaccine mandates, speaking of mandates, came around, he raised his hand and said, I'm sorry, everybody, this is that time. You've heard me talk about forever how when it's difficult, that's when you have to stand up, raise your hand, raise concerns. When the bioethics are not supported by whatever you see is to be a violation, you have to speak up. He did, was immediately put on leave and then fired. So if that is not sort of adjudicated in the Supreme Court in a way that is reasonably, what shall we call it, supportive of his ability to do his job as a bioethicist, then we are lost. We have very serious problems. So everybody, it was great to speak with Vivek Ramaswamy. We appreciate him coming by. This is still a constitutional republic, last time I checked. And we should be really, as Alexis de Tocqueville pushed us, willing to practice democracy locally. You heard Vivek several times talk about bottom-up sorts of interventions, and this is a way we can each do that in addition to speaking our mind whenever we have an unpopular opinion, wherever we are. Please do so. But we can also get involved with the local practice of democracy, which is why democracy in America worked. That was the analysis in 1825 by Alexis de Tocqueville, and I think it applies today. Think about your local governments and what they do for you. It's your police, it's your fire, it's your roads, it's your sewage system, it's your electricity and water oftentimes. This is what matters in your life, is your local government, and that functions well. And a lot of the nonsense that is coming out of our federal government is not operating in your city or townships or counties. It's just not part of the story. And it was never the idea, never meant that the federal government the oversight government that was meant to just make sure we had a more perfect union of the states, to make sure the states functioned properly amongst themselves, that that government would somehow start to reach into the lives of individual citizens and tell them how to live and what to be afraid of and to hide under their bed if something should come around. That is not the federal government's job. Should never have been. And but to be fair, I guess I will adjust my opinion a little bit and say that local government here in Los Angeles and LA County did do the bidding of the federal government and the state government and was very active in the hide under your bed, shelter in place bullshit that we were all subjected to. So, if we'd been more active locally, maybe we would have been able to push back against them. So next time, listen to your instincts. Don't be frightened by what they're saying. Ask for evidence. Ask for cost-benefit analysis on everything they do. And I think we may have learned something from all this, though I don't know. I personally can't get over it. I don't know how you all feel about that. Caleb, anything from you before I wrap this thing up?
Nothing new from me. We will have the spaces running by Thursday. That's when the new mixer board gets here. I think we just blew up the old mixer board last week, and that's why it still doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh. Well, there you go. Well, we're out. We're going to be in the South the rest
we're
of the
week. We're going to New Orleans.
Yeah. And this has been a little choppy, I know.
With no work.
I know. We're trying to get over the shock of losing our dog, which is just like a shock. And
I'm glad it was planned. It almost got canceled.
It almost got canceled because we thought he was going to be having surgeries and this and that.
Oh, my God.
But we appreciate
you. He did us a favor.
For coming by. I have a feeling he's going to be the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party. I don't know what
he had total poker face. Did you see him? He did not flinch. He just
you know
was
what
like,
I got? I actually am pretty good at reading that stuff. What I got from him was he will be in the administration. It just hasn't been decided yet.
Oh, for sure. If Trump wins, for sure.
It just hasn't been decided in what capacity.
I mean, it's the people you hire around you that
he could
make
be.
You a great
he could be HHS.
Office.
He could be what was Ben Carson's job? That was I forget what that. But he could do that. He could be a cabinet level official, or he could be a vice president. But whatever it is, I look forward to going to a White House to visit Vivek Ramaswamy. I think he's a very interesting guy. I think he's a very smart guy.
If you'll get invited.
I'm glad he's out there fighting. I think he's an asset for all of us, and we should get behind him as best we can. That's all I'm saying. Please do read the Paxlovid study IED. I recommend you do so. The null hypothesis was informative, I would say, because the material because the way the study was designed, the Paxlovid did not work. So the hypothesis was it would not work. It did not work. So the null hypothesis was confirmed. So in that case, it was informative for that particular circumstance. Doesn't mean it never works under any circumstance. It means it's not particularly, it doesn't stand up to good scientific scrutiny. So we will leave it at that. I'll be back. Let's get the schedule up, Caleb, if you don't mind. I'll be back on next Monday. Put it up here. Sorry to call that. Okay, tomorrow with Ivor Cummings and Kelly Victory. Jack Prosabic in here on Monday. Matthias Desmond, who I've been looking forward to speaking to for literally 2 years. He is sort of someone that has studied mass formation in populations well before COVID. He was trying to understand how Nazism happened and how early 20th century Russia happened and how the French Revolution happened. He's been studying these things, and I got a million questions for him. And that show will be on April 16th at noon. April 22nd, Salty Cat Cracker returns. 23rd, Naomi Wolf returns. 24th, Tom Renz returns. And then Donald Trump Jr., whose show I did and had a nice conversation with and then took endless shit for daring to talk to Donald Trump Jr. I guess we will talk to him again on this show. Emily's been hard at work booking.
Drew doesn't like taking shit.
Look, the more people complain, the more I want to do it.
There's our, I guess, to take our marching orders from Vivek. There's where you got to stand up and do it. Brent, let's talk to this guy. Let's bring him in. Let's see what's going on. Put our money where our mouth is and have those conversations.
I want to get Trump too.
Well,
the big Trump.
Emily, get Emily going. She's good. We'll see what she can put together.
He thinks you're a wonderful man, Drew.
How do you know that?
He said it to my son. Your dad is an amazing man.
Well, we'll see.
I don't know if he even knew who you were, but.
And we got to get RFK Jr. back too, because he is out there. He's been just doing great.
No, you were a great man. I remember now.
A great man. Fair enough. So everybody, we appreciate you being here.
He's a great man.
Check out Kelly Victor
tomorrow. He's my man.
With Ivor Cummings. And we will see you all on Monday at 3 o'clock next week. Thank you so much for joining us. And then tomorrow at 3 with Kelly Victory. Ask Dr. Drew is produced by Caleb Nation and Susan Pinsky. As a reminder, the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care, diagnosis, or treatment. This show is intended for educational and informational purposes only. I am a licensed physician, but I am not a replacement for your personal doctor, and I am not practicing medicine here. Always remember that our understanding of medicine and science is constantly evolving. Though my opinion is based on the information that is available to me today, some of the contents of this show could be outdated in the future. Be sure to check with trusted resources in case any of the information has been updated since this was published. If you or someone you know is in immediate danger, don't call me, call 911. If you're feeling hopeless or suicidal, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. You can find more of my recommended organizations and helpful resources at drdrew.com/help. We'll be right back.